Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
Look at the screen. William Blix, the great red dragon, and the woman clothed in the rays of the sun. Do you see?
I know that I'm not smart.
Then how did you catch me?
You had disadvantages.
What disadvantages?
You're insane.
Do you see?
You're so sly. So am I.
Do you see?
You're supposed to be his friend, Jack. Why didn't you leave him alone?
Do you see? Mrs. Leeds. Do you see?
Yes. You want the scent?
Smell yourself.
Do you see?
Just you and me now, sport.
Do you see?
You've seen these films, haven't you, my man?
You owe me awe.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Minhunter, a Manhunter podcast examining Michael Mann's 1986 adaptation of Thomas Harris's Red Dragon, scene at a time. And today I'm here with a really extremely talented and just lovely, lovely guy, a great writer, a stunt aficionado, an action cinema aficionado, and a champion of stunt cinema, a big part of the Vulture Stunt Awards. And the man who most recently broke the internet just because he decided to show a Michael Mann film, his favorite, not this one, but that's okay, to his girlfriend and somehow caused a gigantic meltdown from like a really well-established curator at one of the biggest museums in the world and caused one of the craziest like mental breakdowns I think I've ever seen on the internet just because he showed one person that he loves his favorite movie. Oh man, I love this guy. It's Brandon Streisand. Brandon, it's so good to talk to you, man. It's good to see you.
It's so good to see you and to be back on here. Thank you again for having me, especially after the week that I just had.
It's the craziest week of all time. I reached out. Katie Walsh, my co-host of Miami Nice, is in England and Scotland, like traveling, and was texting me on WhatsApp. And so we stay in touch, you know, obviously for our show. And Katie wrote me a message that at some point just said, we must protect Brandon at all costs.
It's so crazy how much it spread to like just everywhere. Like I had a filmmaker message me and he was like, it's like, I'm in Munich right now at a film festival and all anyone can talk about is Miami Vice. And he was like, I didn't understand why. And then he's like, when I found out it was you, he was like, it made me really happy. And he was like, I'm glad it was you who kicked this off. But man, it's just so bizarre. I don't fully understand it, but I mean, I hope the person that was having the meltdown is okay, but she also led me to a lot of cool opportunities, so I don't know, maybe I should thank her.
thank you to that person. I was just going to say, the filmmaker I believe you're talking about is one of the Ross brothers who directed Bloody Nose and Empty Pockets.
Trivia
for those Ross Bros fans out there. And Gasoline Rainbow, of course. Katie and I are hoping to chat to them again soon because I think Bill was on our show. Bill and Gary, they cut a Miami Vice trailer as one of their first gigs in the industry.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yes.
Yeah, because he actually, it's funny, he sent me, not to blow up his spot, but he sent me the link to the episode he did with you guys, and
Yes.
I've been meaning to listen to that. Yeah,
That's the
because
one.
he,
That's the
yeah,
one.
that's amazing.
And so he's been a huge fan of Vice, and we got to speak to him. We're very excited. I was, I like you, was completely blown over by the great film Bloody Nose and Empty Pockets. I think you
Yeah.
counted as one of your favorites of the decade, or I can't remember what that list was that you shared some time ago, but I remember you, it was such a high one on your list, and I was just another one of those convergences of our appreciations together. I was like, oh, that's a
Yeah.
great movie. That's a great movie. It hit me for six when I saw it. So great. So great. But yeah, the internet is a strange place, Brandon. I don't have any idea why things kick off. I remember the one I've explained to people is at breakfast a few months ago with my wife. She went up to get a coffee from the counter, and I tweeted some what I felt was a pretty innocuous tweet about Jason Clarke. I was like, how like low key great is Jason Clarke? And I put my phone down, and I had breakfast. My wife was just chatting. I was trying to be in the conversation, not on your phone. You're just talking. We're having a laugh and a nice relaxing morning. And I put my phone in my pocket. I didn't even look at it. I got back home, finished my coffee, was working away. And then I put my phone out and I just had like 1,000 notifications. And I was like, what? What happened? And just so many people just started reacting like, yes, he's great. Yeah, no. Fuck Jason Clarke. What about this person? I'm like, what is going on? I wrote this tweet with no thought, and it exploded, and you never know what's going to happen. And I miss
Never.
that about the old Twitter, that you never knew what was going to happen. It feels like the old Twitter again, just for a moment, because you're like, you wrote something and people just, it became, it's a life of its own. It's the
Yeah.
craziest thing.
It's yeah, and it's funny because like with stuff like that, it'll hit the people that you intended to hit first, where they're like, "Oh, this is great, blah, 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 blah," and everything. And then it hits like a certain point where you are in a part of Twitter where you don't normally hang out, and people where people only take things in bad faith. And what's funny is I've said this a few times now, I didn't respond to her with the intention of only arguing with her. I had responded to a few people, which that's the problem. You don't
Yes,
respond. Like I made the
yes.
big mistake. But I had got to a point where I was just like, why are people responding to me this way? I was getting people saying like, she needs to break up with you. Can we crowdfund like her an escape from this relationship? And I was like, man, people are psychotic. And then this woman responded, and I happened to respond to her. And lo and behold, the person I responded to has a history of doing this sort of thing, and I had no idea. And yeah, but again, she
If someone
for.
was going to make a woman who is like clearly better than her partner, i.e., my wife, break up with her partner for showing them a Michael Mann film. Like, if that was grounds for divorce, it would be over, right? You know how many times I've shown her Michael Mann, but you need to watch Heat. You need to watch Heat again, and we should really watch The Insider. And let's watch Heat again. And how many times she's now lovingly put up with me watching Michael Mann movies, or making her watch them for the first time or rewatch them. It's just like, get a grip. Like, it's not like, seriously, how many partners make watch like, I'm thinking of like horrific horror movies, or just a Star Wars,
Yeah.
like get a grip. It's my advice.
Well, the positive side of this was seeing all the people discovering it for the first time,
That's
and
cool.
and talking about it. Like there was someone who this girl wrote an article, I believe the website was Kotaku. And it
Yes.
was all about how she had watched Miami Vice for the first time because of this, and was like blown away by it, and like it really moved her. And I had a few people say that after the screening at IFC that they found it more moving than they expected. And I was like, yeah, there's a lot more to this movie than just like guys shooting each other. And as you know, you did a whole
We
podcast on it.
do a show on it, right? And you were obviously a part of that podcast. And I remember one time we did a screening, an online screening with our community at One Heat Minute, watching a version of Miami Vice, which Katie and I have dubbed the Miami Nice Cut, which is a blend of the theatrical and theatrical and director's cuts, our version of it. It's, you know, Blake and Katie's version. And what happens in those conversations, we do like a live chat while we're talking and everyone can chat about it and say jokes. And the beginning of the movie is just like, fuck, this movie's cool. And then it's lots of jokes. And then by the end, everyone's crying and telling everyone else that they love each other. They're like, I love you guys. I love this fucking movie. I love that we're doing this. I love that we're together. And like, we're all crying. We've all had too much to drink. And that's how it goes. It's like, it starts out, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. Then it's just us relentlessly like doing impressions and making fun of some of the dialogue or taking it out of context and being silly. And then it's like, this movie just made me bawl for the last 20 minutes. And that's literally been the number of experiences that I've had watching it. It's like, it's a fantastic movie. And I think it's completely underrated. It was much like the movie that we're here to talk about today, Manhunter. It's a movie that, that kind of people really took it at kind of like adaptation value to start with. And that's exactly the same response that they had with Miami Vice. It was an adaptation of a TV show. It didn't hit what I expected from it. And so it was bad. And I think as we've become more dislocated from the original Miami Vice series to that as its own entity, it's like, oh no, I can just appreciate it for what it is.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just, there's just such a joy in seeing other people experience something that you love. And it's just, yes, I
nothing
really,
better.
Yeah. And I just loved that there was the screenings in New York. There was a screening in LA at the Lumiere Theater. They did one in Miami. I forget the name of the theater, unfortunately.
Great, Brandon. Yeah. You're the best.
And then someone even reached out to me who programs a drive-in theater, and he was like, I couldn't show the movie, but he was like, I ran the trailer before one of our showings. I was like, that's amazing. He sent me, like, he filmed like the drive-in and with the trailer and everything. It was so cool. And like, I don't know, it was a very bizarre, stressful week, but my girlfriend actually made a good point and said, you know, there's something really cool that, like, for even just this brief period of time or just in a small way forever, like, I'm going to be associated with my favorite movie in some way. So that's really cool. Yeah.
Look,
that's like,
it's a bizarre thing to, you know, and right now it's going to happen and I hope it endures, but you're going to type in Miami Vice and your name's going to come up in Google.
That's fun. That's very fun.
And what's crazy, and you know how much my favorite Michael Mann film is Heat.
Yeah. And
my name is inexorably connected to it. And that, if you'd told me that in 2004, like 20 years ago, that would happen, I would have been like, you're an idiot. Like, what are you talking about? But, you know, it's so cool. And yeah, it's great. And you're, you know, so much of your internet persona is like you put out things in goodwill and then there's like a few cheeky jokes, which are great. Right. But this one was like your most earnest. Like, yeah, I can't wait to show my favorite thing. And this is like, I love how your most earnest people are like, no, how dare you? It's like, what are you talking about? It's great. Really enjoyable. Man. So funny. Well, look, it's so great to talk to you. I just had to address that right at the top because it has been a fascination point on the internet. Thank you for your service. But let's dive into this. Manhunter. I know you're a Michael Mann guy. I know you're an action, you know, especially a guy who appreciates mood, tone, not necessarily a connection to a grounded reality, but just style, sometimes superseding the story. So coming back to Manhunter now before we dive into this scene, because we together are on the fifth episode of this series now so far. So can you tell me a little bit about your relationship with Manhunter, if any, and what your most recent rewatch was, like gearing up for this chat?
So I love it. Like it's so funny because I think Mann's best period, like in terms of like, if you were to pull like 100 people and ask them, you know, where did his best work come from? I would assume the vast majority of them would say the 90s, you know, with
Yes.
Heat and Insider and maybe even Mohicans, because that had a lot of mainstream success. And I love all of those movies. I mean, they're all, to me, they're all masterpieces, but I always gravitate towards his 80s work and his 2000s work.
Yes.
And so, because they both fit a mood that I love so much, just in different ways, but kind of similar ways too. And I mean, all of his movies are like of a piece with each other, as you know, but so Manhunter is one I come back to a lot. I really love it. But this most recent, I hadn't seen it for a while. I just had grown up, you know, my dad would tell me, because I had seen Silence of the Lambs, and I believe I had seen, I don't think I'd seen the Brett Ratner version of this, which I don't think I'll ever watch. but I had seen, that's Red Dragon, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I had seen Silence of the Lambs, and I'd seen Hannibal. And then my dad would tell me every once in a while, you know, there's another Hannibal movie that like doesn't connect to these. And I was like, oh, that's cool. But it always felt like this like weird, like non or not, not unnecessary sort of thing that I didn't really need to watch. But he would always tell me like, it's great. And I would just be like, oh no, you know, Anthony Hopkins is it and everything. And then I finally watched it, you know, probably in my teens as I was like discovering more movies and everything. And I didn't know what to make of it at first. I just knew that there was something effective about it. But then over the years, as I've seen it over and over again, it really has become one of my favorites of his work. Like I just tweeted today, right before we started, that I had been rewatching it, and it just, I think a lot of his work feels like he's transmitting images from like other realities, especially in his early digital work.
Yes.
Where it feels so bizarre. But this one, the images are so fractured and strange that I feel like he's pulling this one directly from hell. And it's like, it's, I haven't seen the movie yet, but it's the same kind of feeling I got from all of the marketing from Long Legs. And
yes.
It's like, I'm now going to go into Long Legs, like with that in mind, because it feels, they feel weirdly of a piece with each other. And maybe who knows? I haven't seen the movie. I could be completely wrong, but I don't know. This movie just feels so, it feels like you are having a nervous breakdown with William Peterson, who's unbelievable in this movie.
Yes. And it's the different, the contrast in moments. You know, we've just come out in episode 4, who folks now will be listening to this hopefully sequentially, but Connor O'Donnell and Dan Mecker and I were talking about the scene where Graham's in his hotel room. He's watching the video of the Leeds family. He's coming up with his epiphany, which we're going to tackle directly in this scene. And the shift between tones in the hotel, which is meant to be warm and comforting, but feels completely kind of cold and, you know, manufactured. And then this like gorgeous brief dreamscape of Kim Grease, like in a bed, like bathed in blue. And it's like, these are different universe. It's like this is a portal into another place, even though it's like meant to be grounded in reality. Like just that contrast of this like serene, peaceful blue in the context of this man movie and this like place where Will Graham usually feels alien and then transmitted back, and then the actual footage of the Leeds family. It's just like these worlds are interconnected and they're talking to each other, having a dialogue, but he's not in any way, shape, or form, like committing to like it has to look this same way. Whereas you watch Silence of the Lambs, and I think that Demme's an absolute master at this, is like that movie completely and wholly feels grounded and connected and consistent in a way. And then you get to Ridley and Hannibal, and that's more like macabre and kind of like universal movie monster Hannibal Lecter. It's like they all sort of flex their style in beautiful and wonderful and different ways. So, but I agree. I've loved Manhunter from the first time I stumbled on it, having absolutely no clue what the hell it was, and being really familiar with Silence of the Lambs and Hannibal. And then once I became a Michael Mann head, I've gone back to this many times and just been continually blown away at the visual language of it.
Well, I like that you pointed out too that they feel like two different universes interacting with each other, the hotel room and then his wife in bed, because I wrote about this for Miami Vice's 15th anniversary. I wrote a little bit about how his Miami feels like a purgatory. And I feel like you know, a lot of his work feels that way. I feel like, especially, and in this one especially, Will Graham feels like he himself is in hell in this entire movie. But every time
Yes.
he reaches out to his wife is like, that's his like escape. And he's like, mentally, he just can't do it. And it's almost the escape to the ocean that you see in almost every man movie where they're gazing out at the ocean, and you know, Sonny gets to experience it in Miami Vice and everything. And it's almost like that escape away is made literal because he has it. He's like
Yes.
gotten out of the game.
Yes.
And he doesn't need to do this. And it's like he can't help himself. And it's
Yes.
he can't help himself but to not be back in hell. It's really it's a very sad movie. It's profoundly sad.
It profoundly sad. And because also he starts to his heart rate gets up in a way that in this sort of hellish landscape that he has to like staring at all these awful things, his heart rate gets up and he feels like more he's in his element than any part of those moments when he's like in the beautiful escape. It's like he achieved the escape. You're right, he achieved it, but he's not, he doesn't have nearly as much fun in the escape as he does in these dark and awful places. All right, well, let's jump into this because I can't wait to talk to you. As everyone who's hopefully listening so far, you would know, you know, one of the big inspirations for One Heat Minute, aside from just minute podcasts like the Star Wars Minute, knowing that that thing exists, was Roger Ebert's Cinema Interruptus, where he got a classic film at a festival. He would sit down in, with an audience, and basically just every single time they wanted to, they would say stop on the movie to scrutinize every shot, every performance note, every piece of business in the mise-en-scène, everything in the design. So we're in the theatrical cut. If you're in the theatrical cut, it's minute 18:11 to 21 minutes 34 seconds, and if you're in the director's cut, it's about 16 minutes 17 seconds to 21 minutes and 25 seconds. It's the Atlanta office after the discovery of or Will's hunch that there'll be a fingerprint. So it's a great walk and talk. Brandon and I are going to start watching it together. We're going to interrupt it unrelentingly until we feel like we've squeezed everything out of it. And hopefully you guys enjoy listening along.
Our people swear he wore surgeon's gloves the whole
If we
time.
could
They
pause it
dusted
real quick,
everything. Yeah.
this is right before this scene. It's the one that you just covered that you were just talking about. I just want to point out, I love the repetition of Mann's movies where there's things that happen in almost all of his movies, or they repeat each other, they echo each other. A friend pointed out after the Miami Vice screening the other day that you know, they love that, you know, Ola Chica is something that comes back a
Yes.
lot. But the one that I can't believe I've never noticed until this most recent rewatch, but he does the Nick Hathaway, isn't it, you son of, or didn't you son of a
Son of a
bitch?
bitch.
Like, yeah, I like jumped out of my chair when that happened on my last rewatch, because like, oh my God, that's Black Hat. Like, and I was like, I can't believe, like, the many times I've seen this, I never put that together. So doesn't have anything to do with this part of the movie, but I just wanted to point that out, that like it was like the Leo DiCaprio pointing meme from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Hey.
I was like, Black Hat.
Oh, that's so good. We need to get that cut. I might have to see if I can cut that together for us, Brandon. We'll start building a meme template as we speak. No, but you're so right. It's I think also the origin point, and this is what I want to get really specific on, is that man has a very specific Chicago. It's a very Dennis Farina almost inspired, and Dennis Farina is like the key, I guess the I want to say he's like the essence of it, is that Chicago ball busting kind of you son of a bitch, you did, you know, like that the way that that vernacular comes is just like the way that people in Chicago of this time communicated with each other, you know, like talking to each other, calling each other sport and slick and you son of a bitch and those sorts of things. And so
Word, yeah.
knowing that, and like Peterson's a Chicago guy too, so it's like that Chicago vernacular, those things, it's just like that's in man's wheelhouse. That's how he has heard people talk his entire life, and it's just that's he loves putting that into characters.
In sport, you're right. Sport comes back a lot. Like, it's in this, you know, just you
Yeah.
and me now. Sport, it's in
Yeah.
Miami Vice, you
Yeah.
know. That scene really blew the roof off the other day, when she blows away the Nazi. But But yeah, Farina and is just such a great find. And it was Thief, right? That he found him first. Yeah, and
he was a henchman,
a cop. Yeah, and he's a cop in real life, and he's just such a naturally like perfect actor for these kind of movies. And I mean, of course, he gives to me, you know, I think he should have won an Oscar for Midnight Run. He's so funny in that movie.
He's unbelievable in Midnight Run, and funny and just sensational. But yeah, he's, you know, again, in the Michael Mann universe, it's like Charlie Adamson was the guy who originally killed Neil McCauley, and his partner was Frank Farina.
Wow. That's pretty amazing.
It's just like, for those real Michael Mann diehards, there's nothing better than that. There's nothing better than knowing that. It's like Charlie Adamson's partner was Frank Farina. It's like...
And he has such a great way of finding faces, too, because, you know, I mean, Peterson's in, like, half a second of Thief in the bar, and you immediately... I mean, maybe it's, like, a retroactive thing where you're like, that's William Peterson, but still, he does catch your eye because he's a striking-looking person.
Yes.
And he's, like, such a great choice for Graham in this movie.
So we go from warmth, the kind of awful, hellish warmth of a hotel room. We're now on a walk and talk in the Atlanta office, stark backgrounds, just white. And here, kind of like trying to discount Will's hunch. And it's just so great. So let's keep going on this wonderful walk and talk.
Your report didn't mention eyes.
Why do you think he took his gloves off?
Because Mrs. Leeds was a beautiful woman.
I want to pause it here because if we just go back like a split second, I think it would be like 18 minutes, 27 seconds. So, I'm just going to play it to set it up.
Mrs. Leeds was a beautiful woman.
He says, Mrs. Leeds is a beautiful woman. And if we just stop, you see the guy who he's saying it to turn his head. Like, that is one of the most fucking awful things I've ever heard. He just looks at him like, Mrs. Leeds is a beautiful woman. He looks at him and you're like, he does the look that you feel in your heart.
Yeah. And it's such a perfect, like, sort of way to show that, you know, Graham, in some way, because he's lived inside these people's heads for most of his life at this point, he's just as fucked up as they are. Like, he knows, he thinks like a serial killer. And it's just like, he says it so casually, like he says it, you know, like it's nothing. And so for this, you know, it's funny because he's working with other cops here too. You would think all of these cops would be sort of inured to like this kind of, you know, thought pattern, and it wouldn't surprise them. But even they are just like, man, I'm not this bad. Like, I've seen a lot of bad shit, but this guy just doesn't care.
It's like the head of a murder investigation department in Atlanta is like, that is one of the most fucked up things I've ever heard. Like, that's so good. And again, just the composition here, I love the claustrophobia of this hallway. I don't know if it's real, like if it's really in the offices. I would say that it is. They did shoot parts of this in Atlanta. But just again, look at Frank Farina's broad shoulders. Like, he's anchoring this like little crew walking out. Look at how massive, he's such a big unit. Like, he's like they don't make guys like that in drama school. Like, this guy, he's walking the hard, cold, you know, tough streets of Chicago. And just that choice to bring him in and like anchor this piece is so smart here. Even just like visually, it's so cool that he's like the biggest, tallest, most imposing character.
Yeah. And he takes up most of the frame in this scene. It's pretty, and he's not a guy that I would, you know, if he's standing in a room or if he's like in a scene with other people, you don't really, it doesn't catch your eye that he's a big guy. You don't think of him as a big guy, but then in this scene, you're like, wow, he's towering over these people. And it's, I've always thought William Peterson was kind of a bigger guy, but he's not apparently. Yeah. or just Farina's, you know, a monster.
Oh, great. Let's keep walking after that awful statement.
This is what the subject's teeth looked like. The Smithsonian in Washington reconstructed these from the impressions that we took of the bite marks on the Leeds woman here and the Jacoby woman in Birmingham last month. As you can see, He has pegged lateral incisors. That's these teeth here.
I have to say, and I know you'll appreciate this too, is like what we later learn about, or we know about Dolarhyde, is the blonde hair and those sorts of things. And this guy, you know, showing us these incisors. And with all respect, like this guy's like a Ridley Scott, like little freak kind of guy. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like he's like a freakish looking guy, very unusual. The hair is very weird. He's got like kind of a manicured whip at the back, the mustache, and he examining and kind of like, I don't know, like appraising these teeth freak me out so much in this scene now that I watch it back. I'm like, oh, he's kind of got some of the Dolarhyde markers, blonde hair. I mean, it's yeah.
Like the hair, like the sides without the, you know, top and everything. Yeah. Like the thing that always I find so striking about this entire scene, and we're going to get to it in a second with the other background.
Yes.
But I love how imposing, like there's no, there's really no space given to like sort of relieve you with this background, like with this big map behind him. It feels very disorienting just to watch this because there's nothing else to the wall besides this map. It's so zoomed in right here on this map. You don't see like a door frame or anything like that, or even a lamp or something behind him. It's just this giant map. It's very unsettling in a weird way.
Yeah, it's like he could be this. The reinforcement of the image I keep seeing when I see this scene is like he could be anywhere.
Yeah.
And he could just not even be on the map. It's like, where do you start with a guy who's got like bigger lateral incisors, like this disgusting animalistic looking mouth? Like, like it's awful. And you're like, God, so it's great.
Yeah.
All right, let's keep going.
And here. All right.
Oh, this was, if we want to pause it here, this is the other background that I've always loved in this scene, is like just the green shooting through the blinds just gives it another feel to me that this takes place in like hell, because it's like, what is that light? Where is that light coming from? What's going on the other side of those blinds? Is that like outside? But why would outside be green? It's just like, it's so disturbing to me, this whole scene. Like, this doesn't exist anywhere on earth to me.
And also Will Graham's shirt is green. So it even makes him pop even more. Like he's completely dislocated. Like, you know, Frank Farina, just like all this beautiful, eclectic, very real and authentic feeling Atlanta makeup of human beings in 1986. You know, you've got different ethnicities here. You've got different backgrounds. You got Farina, this sort of stoic big man at the back. You've got Will standing. Of course, Will has to stand up, you know, at the back here and look awkward. But that green, exactly as you said, it's like it goes all the way back to like Vertigo. Like it's death. It's death. There is something here that's at play. And they're all just listening to this briefing very stoically. So creepy.
And yeah, that green just really, it's so weird because green's never been a color that disturbs me. But in this scene, it's like, why, where is that coming from?
Where is that coming from? In reality, it's Dante Spinotti hiding behind the blinds, just like shooting up a gorgeous green light and man going, yeah, that's it, Dante. That's good. Oh, that's so funny.
The bars. Marcus Whitman heads up at the funeral. The rest of your assignments are on the sheet. Let's go. One more thing. I've heard.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
Officers referring to this killer as the Tooth Fairy? Yeah. Well, I don't want to hear that in public, and I don't want to see it in internal memorandum. That's it.
What a dark thing. Like, yeah. You know, what kind of like gallows humor? Oh, it's that a guy bites people. They're like, I'll call him the Tooth Fairy. It's like, Jesus Christ.
Well, and I think that this doesn't get enough credit for sort of, I wouldn't say kickstarting, but sort of being a part of the early true crime sort of fascination, because you know everyone's given like a nickname, you know, all the like the all the serial killers and everything. I think Silence of the Lambs,
Son of Sam, BTK, you know,
yeah,
all that time period was like the emergence of the serial killers, and then they all started getting cool nicknames, you know, the X Killer, the Golden State Killer, you know, all those. That's how you identify. Zodiac, of course, is around this time.
And I think, like, because this is, you know, the Thomas Harris novel, and yeah. I think both of the filmmakers who adapted him the best do a really great job of sort of providing a blueprint to what a lot of these crime procedurals would look like in the future. I mean, Silence of the Lambs is, like, the blueprint for so many crime procedural shows. You know, you talk about William Peterson. I think CSI is so baked into Silence of the Lambs, and I think this here, you know, just calling him the Tooth Fairy, you know, it's all such a, you know, of a piece with one another. It's really fascinating to me.
And hear that, like, again, that it's such a cool period in time, like a period piece as well, because it's like they got a mold and they sent it to the Smithsonian to mold people's teeth. You know, that's how early, you know, some of the things we take for granted, oh, we can digitally recreate what this looked like and do this. No, at the time it was like some guy who's at the Smithsonian, like doing molds of like dinosaur bones or doing molds of like, you know, recreating previous versions of man is like being asked to create the teeth of a serial killer. Like that's just also the practicality of like, there was a guy who made a mold of this somewhere and then sent it back to the Atlanta office seems so crazy to me as well. It just feels like such a tactile, different world where you go back in, they make a mold, they do this. I don't even know how they would have managed it, but it's like they did it.
Well, and this is also, maybe I'm wrong, but this is pre-DNA too.
Yes,
so,
yes.
And that's what's funny is this isn't in the scene we're watching, but it's right before where he talks about he left, you know, DNA on the, or he left saliva on the window. And it's like that, it's just crazy to think about that even like 30 years ago, you could like get away with something and leave so much of yourself behind because we didn't have the tools to figure out, you know, who you were because of that. It's just, it's scary. Like it's, you know, I hadn't put that together until my most recent rewatch, but I was like, yeah, this is pre-DNA, you know, yes. Like they have no way of figuring out who this is and he can spit wherever he wants.
He can spit wherever he wants. Oh God, that's going to be in my head for the next month. Oh, Brandon.
I know a burglar's going to fence what he stole because his motive is cash money. I know his motive. So I go to work on fences.
I have to just quickly start here. It's so great. This is great. He walked the lead here walks over the head of the field office. He walks over and he carves his way through the crowd. And you're literally watching pretty much from Jack Crawford, Frank Farina's, Dennis Farina's perspective. Dennis Farina folds his arms and he's starting to give him a bit of a lesson. You know, I know what a burglar's motive, you know, I know when a burglar steals something, I know he's got to fence it. I know his motivation is cash money. And the look, I'm just going to try and catch it for us, Brandon. The look on Dennis Farina's face, which is at 19 minutes and 28 seconds, is like, really?
Are you kidding me?
Are you really fucking trying to teach me? You're trying to teach me what, like, the importance of what my behavioral science team does? Like, I know.
Like, and it's even funnier to view it through like a metatextual lens, where it's like Farina was a cop in real life, and he has to sit here and listen to these bullshit lines and everything, and he's like,
listen to these bullshit actors tell him about policing. Oh, really? It's so wonderful. His face here. This is another reaction meme. This face here. I'm gonna screenshot it as we're talking. I'm gonna send it to Brandon so that he can. It's giving me grief right now in the Zoom chat, but I'm gonna have to send it to you at some point, Brandon, because it's just tell me again.
And that's such an iconic Farina look. I've seen him do that a million times to people. Yeah. Like, he's just so great at that.
It's just like, what are you talking about? It's so great. So to get back to the text, we're going to start getting a little bit more behind the actual Tooth Fairy himself and obviously Francis Dolehide, one of the greatest named characters of all time. But I just love this moment here of him looking, going, what are you trying to teach me here that I don't already know?
I was motive. So I go to work on fences. This guy, we don't even have motive. None of us have shit, and we know it.
It's in his dreams.
His motive?
Yeah. His act fuels his fantasy.
Which is?
I don't know.
Commissioner was saying that you're the one who got Garrett Jacob Hobbs, and then Dr. Lecter 3 years ago.
Lecter killed 9 people, didn't he?
9 that we know of. 2 didn't die.
What happened to them?
One's on a respirator at a hospital in Baltimore. The other's in a private mental hospital in Denver.
What the psychologists say was wrong with Lecter?
Psychologists call him a psychopath. They don't know what else to call him.
There's so much here. Yeah. We have to go back for a second. Yeah. There's just so much. The in his dreams line that then reframes the entire shot is so fantastic.
Again, this whole, like you said, it reframes the shot. It's like a wide now of all of them in the room together, and you see the green streaming through again. It's just like, it's a perfect moment to have that shot reappear, because it feels like you're in somebody's dreams watching this movie. It's just a great cut to that moment. But I also love the entire time Peterson's talking about this, like, yes, he feels so cold and removed and everything, but he also is on the verge of tears the entire time. He just looks like he's about to break down at any moment.
Yes.
Such a great performance.
He's the rawest nerve. It's like raw electricity. It's like someone has stripped away the casing on a cord, you know, and you just know that if you touch it, you're going to get a shock. That's his whole personality to me. It's just like he's all the nerve with all the housing on that electrical cord that usually protects you from getting a zap. That's him.
It's just completely him. It's like I said, like, I just feel like this movie is so fractured and nervy just in its look and its editing. And then every time you see him, you're like, oh, he's that completely.
Also love, don't you love compositions like this? Is 19 minutes, 55 seconds where we're paused. Is Spielberg does this so sensationally in Munich, which is one of my favorites of his, where he composes the different heights of all of the characters in such a beautiful way that it looks like a painting. Like, it's like the fact that Graham is sort of half leaning, sitting on the table, the doctor who's gone through and the investigator who's gone through and discussed the Smithsonian bite is there. Farina, tall, powering, imposing, arms folded. The interplay from the actors and just the structure of the way that it all kind of this is a kind of weird triangle of bodies. It's almost like a, you know, it kind of looks it's in a weird way, it's like a snapshot of like the Last Supper or something. It's like, it's it just, really they're all, yeah. It's, they've got this weird structure of their bodies I can't get enough of.
Yeah, blocking is such a lost art now. And like, this just feels so simple, but it's like, you're looking at this and it's just, they're it's so dynamic. Like, you don't want to take your eye away from it because they all are at different heights. You know, they're positioned just perfectly that it doesn't feel haphazard in any way. It feels both sort of natural, but also like they're there with purpose.
Yes. Yeah. The composition is so purposeful, but it's like, it also makes perfect sense. It's just like that, but he's found a way to just be that exact mid shot, like just close enough that it blocks everything out. And then the power dynamics of all the scenes, like when Will's looking up and where in Will's position about like what is happening here and how they're talking to one another, and how, when it cuts to the one shots of the individual reaction shots, the actors in this little circular cordon of people, this little huddle, is so wonderful.
And you also pointed out earlier his William Peterson's wardrobe. And it is funny to see him now with all of these other guys. They're all wearing gray, like typical suits. And his is like stark black with that green shirt. It's so funny. Like, he looks so out of place compared to these three.
Looks out of place. His tie's all textured. And he's got, you know, they've all got very manicured facial hair. His is kind of like a bit of a shambles, you know. It's just the way he's slightly unkempt here is just great as well.
Yeah.
Lecter killed 9 people, didn't he?
9 that we know of.
Every response that Will Graham has in this movie is terrifying. It's like, 9 Lecter killed 9 people. 9 that we know of. Jesus Christ, Will.
And I like to, or you can play the line and then I'll point it out.
Who didn't die?
What happened to them?
There, here we go.
Respirator at a hospital.
So I like when I like when he says 2 didn't die, and then he says what happened to them. I feel like there's like a very brief sort of like, not pause, but there's almost something there that's like, he almost wants to say 3 didn't die because he almost feels like another victim of Lecter, and it's like he's, you know, sort of withholding that, but I feel like it's all there on his face, the way he's talking. I don't know. Maybe, you know, I don't know if I'm reading too much into
that. No, I don't think, I mean, look, this is the show for you to read too much into it. But it's, he has a little, I just want to go back a split second because, and we'll just play it. So, there's a kind of twitch here in his eye.
Dr. Lecter.
He says Garrett Jacob Hobbs and Dr. Lecter. There's a twitch.
Yeah.
It's right like there, yeah. There's a twitch. And it's like, oh, there's something. And you know that it's not present throughout William Peterson's performance. So you know that little touch is so fantastic. He hears those names and Dr. Lecter twitch. It's like there is something here. So I think that you're absolutely right. When he's like, 2 victims didn't die. He refuses to call himself a victim, but in many respects, absolutely, you're spot on. Like, he does, he's a survivor. And so, yeah, such, so great. I don't think you're reading anything into that. I think it's like, it gears it up for this moment.
9 that we know of, 2 didn't die.
What happened to them?
1's on a respirator at a hospital in Baltimore. The other's in a private mental hospital in Denver.
What the psychologist say was wrong?
Psychologist.
How much joy does he take? What did he say was wrong with Lecter?
I was just picking up on that his questions to Will Graham, he's like almost getting off on asking him these questions because he's like, he's excited to hear about it. And it's like, it's as grossed out as he was maybe a minute or two ago when they were doing the walk and talk down the hallway and he did that, like, you know, quick turn of the head. Now he's like all in. He's like, I want to hear all about this, you know, because
what does this guy know? Right. Like, it's very much like, I'm going to scrutinize. What does this guy know? Show me his bona fides. Cause to me, he looks disheveled. He doesn't look like the rest of us in our gray suits. He hasn't got he's not clean shaven, and he keeps saying weird shit. He keeps saying like he sees stuff in his dreams, and it's just like, it does not compute.
Yeah.
This guy, like, it's really, it couldn't be more stark to to what Michael Mann is saying here is like, this is the cutting edge in a lot of his movies. Exactly. It's like the cutting edge. The cutting edge is behavioral science and how you have to get into this sort of empathetic mode to truly understand and unpack what is going on with these people. This is great.
Call him a psychopath.
Yeah.
They don't know what else to call him.
Little twitch.
I understand he cut you pretty good.
He even gets joy out of that, you know.
Yeah.
He's like, this is like a traumatic moment for Will Graham, you know, and this guy's just bringing it up like it's nothing. He's like, remember that time he fucked you up? Wasn't that crazy?
Wasn't it crazy how he stabbed you? And you see Farina just roll his eyes like, oh, Jesus fucking Christ. It is like, I know that I have to police. Literally, this is Farina as Crawford does such a great job. He's like, he's policing the fanboy fame of and notoriety of Will with these people. He's like, Will's in the room, so I'm going to stand next to him to hopefully avoid him from having to have dumb, awful questions by idiots to have this. And yet, this guy can't help himself. No, I understand he cut you pretty good. It's like, oh, just like, Jesus Christ.
He's becoming so giddy as the exchange is going on, where he's just like on the edge of his seat, basically, like, tell me more.
Yeah. And he just rolls his eyes.
What about the dog?
I love this. It's Farina rolls his eyes. We get to about 20 minutes, 27 seconds. And the intensity in William Peterson's eyes as Graham just looks at this guy.
Just about to explode, yeah.
And he's like, do I address how awful and what would you call it? It's like antagonistic. Like he wants a response.
Yeah.
Like sometimes people say stuff, you know,
get a reaction. Yeah.
We're both active on like Twitter and stuff like that. And so it's like, sometimes you say something earnest, as we talked about at the beginning, and some people write an inflammatory response and you're like, do I respond to this? And he's like, no, what about the dog? He just gives it a beat. He thinks, he simmers, he's about to explode. And he's like, what about the dog? What about the dog? Let's get back to the leads.
Yeah. He's like so close to boiling over. It's you know, I've always thought it was a great performance, but breaking it down this way and seeing just the little moments on his face and everything, he's incredible here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just love the red in his eyes. He looks tired. He looks like he's already, it's so early in the movie, like we're 20 minutes into, still got, you know, a stack of this movie to go, and he's already like on the ragged edge. It's so fantastic. And he's able to hold it together here, which will lead into obviously why he kind of loses it in the forthcoming scene. But it's right here in this moment.
What about the dog?
It's at the vest. The kids brought it down with a puncture wound in the abdomen.
Jacoby's in Birmingham had a cat, didn't he?
That's right. We found the litter box downstairs, but we didn't find a cat.
Why don't you get Birmingham PD a methane probe out of Washington? Have them cover the backyard. Maybe the cat's dead and the kids buried it.
Yeah.
This is Jimmy Price.
Man, just so much on their faces there. Like, Farina's also pissed off. You can see when he's telling him about the cat and the litter box that they found, that he's like simmering with rage too, because he's just so sick of this guy antagonizing Will. And you know, he just did just so much on their faces there, you know, like no what's the word, self-awareness on the other guy at all.
And getting back to the topic at hand, like, we're bringing up details. Pets at the vet. He's got a puncture wound. Oh, okay. Well, that might be useful to us.
Yeah.
Might be useful to us. It just feels like the subtext is like, that might be useful if they had pets and they're injured or dead. That might be useful, because that would alert the owners that someone's trying to invade their home.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so it's just that. And then we get the phone call. They're kind of frustrated here, and you know, I've stopped it on 20 minutes 57 seconds, and Farina's just sort of looking down. It's frustrating, but they're getting a call and they answer. And this is what's so great about the entire scene, is like, Jack Crawford is here. He's with Will. He's brought Will here to kind of augment, to help this investigation be better. And at this moment, all they can do is fanboy out on him. And he knows that there's more value for him to add. And so when this conversation happens, it kind of reinforces the hunch, which is so fantastic, because it's like, it proves Jack's thought that, like, if I bring Will in, we're going to make leaps on this case that these normal people who can only think in the paradigm of, like, I know what he's trying to get out of these things to find the motive. It's more abstract than that, but this scene I love, because it kind of, Farina gets to give his most Farina energy. It's so great.
Yeah.
Let me put you on the speakerphone.
Who am I talking to?
Jimmy, it's Jack Crawford. You got Will Graham here too.
I got a partial print with a tented arch. It's probably a thumb. And the fragment of a palm off the nail of Mrs. Leeds' left big toe. Thumbprint came off the oldest kid's left eye. It stood out against an 8-ball hemorrhage from the gunshot wound.
Can we make an identification off of it?
8-ball hemorrhage from a gunshot wound. That's a throwback to, that's a Heat.
Yeah.
A Heat-ism.
I love too that, like, while this conversation's happening, the guy who's been fanboying out the whole time is like, he's like sort of shaking back and forth. He's like, I can't, we're getting all this like information, and Graham's just sitting there just like completely undisturbed by it. He's like, just like, I've heard this a million times before. It's just so funny. It's so funny watching their body language off of each other.
And the shock on the Atlanta PD guys, and the kind of smug satisfaction on Farina's face here is just everything. He's just like, yeah. And their guy, Price, who he insisted on in the previous scene, is like, Price is better. Get Price. I don't care if he's running the whole index. I want him to work on it. He's better than anyone that Atlanta PD have got. It's so great.
Maybe, if he's ever been printed and he's in my index. I want to work these up in my own dark room. I'll fax the prints down to you this afternoon.
Thanks, Jimmy.
I just couldn't help laughing.
You have to laugh. Look at
the
this
disgust he has for the other guy is so funny.
It's just like, you fucking small time dummies. You're an embarrassment, right? Like, you're embarrassing. Don't embarrass yourself. I have to say this. I feel like you're Will Graham, Brandon, about Miami Vice, and I'm Jack Crawford. I'm the guy who's standing there like, you fucking idiots. Haven't I told you? Haven't I been saying, man, this?
I'm
this
like, is, I'm disheveled about it. I'm just like,
you're disheveled. Man. Saying things that people are deeming to be crazy, but are just like completely right. And I'm just standing there going, oh, for fuck's sake.
Man, what a way to tie that all together. That was amazing.
So if we ever get to see each other in person, I think I'm just going to shave most of the beard off, keep a little Farina mo, stand there with my arms folded next to you, standing over people. Listen to this fucking guy. Jesus Christ. What are we doing?
Oh God, that was incredible. What a great like bow on everything that is. That's hilarious.
That's so great. And but just like 21, like this moment or this scene ends really 21 minutes 34 seconds into this movie, on the theatrical cut. We're paused right now, Brandon and I are just looking at this face. Farina just smugly looking at this guy like, I told you that you guys missed something because we're asking for prints. Like, we checked it. No, well, I've got a partial print, a palm print, a thumb print on one of the children's eye, which obviously is so gnarly and bad. But all of the stupid questions and the, like, you know, as you said, the kind of like, the people who can't help but stare into the car crash, you know, the rubbernecking kind of view of Will Graham and his personality. And so Farina is just like really flexing here. And I love the smile that he gives the sort of leading guy. And then his other investigator, he gives like this just disdainful, it's like 21 minutes, 31 seconds. He just gives him a look like, you are nothing. You are nothing. It's so awesome.
And it ties back in to the very beginning of this scene when he's towering over everybody. He's towering over this little man again. And it's just like this last final look of like, fuck you.
Oh, wow. What a 20 out of 10 scene. They just, all they can do is just watch them walk out of the office.
God.
Brandon, thank you, man. This is great.
Thank you. This was so fun. I loved the whole format of this. It's very exciting.
It's really fun. Yeah, I think you know, I've there are certain moments, right? Like, remember right back doing One Heat Minute all that time ago, you know, we'd always watch, had it similarly, we'd watch the minute and sometimes go back to different frames and scenes. But I just think, you know, what we've been doing here in Mindhunter and like taking the movie apart in scenes that make sense, for the staging of the movie, not necessarily always wedded to like it has to be in one location or whatever, but just like whatever makes sense, really is it's standing up to the scrutiny, because as you said the shots are so rich, like everything's rich, composition and color and then character, and the text itself becomes like the last thing we're talking about. Like, there's so much exposition of exchange there, but none of it is about the exposition. It's all about the style and the tone and the emotion of this, like all of, you know, it becomes all about the character, and the other exposition stuff is just reinforced sort of how good Will Graham and how good Jack is, you know, and these Atlanta officers are just not ill-equipped to deal with this kind of threat.
He's just such a great visual artist. Like, he really is. Like, I feel like so much, he gets so much flack for his either corny dialogue or dialogue that you can't hear all the time. And it's like, I feel like you can, you know, you can say this has been said about, you know, filmmakers here and there, but I really do feel like you could turn the sound off on a lot of his movies and just get everything you need to know by watching the way he constructs each frame, the blocking of his actors, you know, the way he instructs his actors to, you know, not instructs because it's like all, you know, it's all decisions made by them too, but just like looks people give each other, you just get it all. There's no need really for dialogue. And dialogue's important, but I think he's someone who relies so little on it. And it's like seeing this broken down, you know, frame by frame, you understand why, because he's just so attuned to what image he wants to project.
Yes. And it's, yeah, that's something like on a physical media that I would love to see a couple more of. I think this film with the kind of impending dread of the drones in the score and things like that would just really play exactly as you said. Just like, I don't want to see a subtitle. I want to see it on mute. I just want to hear the score and where it's like almost imperceptible, and then hear it flood and hear it push its way into the scene and inform the tone of the scene. It's like, it's something to be studied. Like I find myself like, you know, sometimes I will literally watch movies, and sometimes I'll just watch something on mute because it's just, I just want to see it. You know, I just want to see it happening. And I think Soderbergh does that great experiment where he like makes Raiders of the Lost Ark in black and white and puts the Social Network soundtrack on it. And he's like, just watch the compositions. Just look at the, like, that's some real nerdy shit, but it's awesome, right? It's, and I think that this movie absolutely plays. But look, man, thank you so much for taking the time to chat to me. Love talking to you as always. Great.
Thank you so much.
You're so great. And this has been so fun. And if we can ever in our wildest dreams get together so we can make the William Peterson, Frank Farina body language of this scene together, that would be a real dream. But you're the best. And thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I always love coming on at your 1 million shows you do.
Well, I'm trying to stay a little bit focused. This is just one show for a chunk of time. And then, but I can tell you, I've already thought about another movie that I want to do after Manhunter. Not in the Michael Mann universe. And I was considering going back to like a minute by minute, but I think this format is, it's addictive. It's addictive.
You're finally going to dive into the Russos and get the Gray Man done.
Do you know how sick I would be? You would know there's a problem. I'd have an intervention. There'd be people,
you're doing the one Gray Man
minute. You would look at me like Farina just looked at those guys. Like, what the fuck? You'd roll your eyes. You're like, Blake's broken. It's over. No.
You're like on minute like 70 and you're like, yep, still gray.
Oh God, that's something we should collaborate on Twitter. Just Brandon and Blake do one gray man minute, but just in tweet form. Yeah, guys, oh, gotta tell you, still gray. Man, bless you. Thank you so much for doing this. This is super fun, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Brandon, is there any like fresh plugs? You know, around the sort of August September period, because this is that kind of when this is going to come out, that you want to share. Otherwise, do I just direct the folks to your great Twitter and that links off to most of your stuff?
Yeah, I would just say that. Yeah, just probably because I'm actually working on quite a few things right now, but none of it's going to be around anytime soon. My most recent piece I was excited about was, there's a Hindi movie in theaters right now called Kill, which is, it's been compared to like The Raid and John Wick, but I think it's doing a little bit more than that. But it's definitely the most violent Hindi movie I've ever seen. And I interviewed the director. His name's Nikhil Nagesh Bhatt. And it's like, it was a quick little interview, but you can find that on Inverse. And I really recommend that, reading that after you see the movie, because he provides a lot of insight into some of the decisions he made regarding the villains and the caste system and everything. It's really interesting, and it's a really great film. I really encourage people to seek that out.
I'm going to seek it out. I just got my hands on the gorgeous Umbrella Entertainment Raid 4K.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Which is stunning, and also just a sensational movie. And so I've kind of like, what do you call it? Like, I've given myself like an appetizer, and I'm now like, I didn't get a chance to see Monkey Man. I'm waiting on the physical media of Monkey Man to check that out. And I'm like, now that Kills out, I'm like, okay, good. That sounds great. So no.
Well, just to sell people, I do think, like, the way people have been calling it The Raid, I think it's a little bit limiting, but I will say at its base, it's The Raid on a train, which I think is exciting enough.
Oh my God, that's enough. Yeah. You just sold. Thank you so much, man. All the best.
Take care.
I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, definitely.
This has been an episode of Minhunter, the latest Michael Mann deep dive at One Heat Minute Productions. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to check out other deep dive series we've done on Michael Mann, go over to oneheatminute.com. You can find links to all of our previous shows, including One Heat Minute, The Last 12 Minutes of the Mohicans, Miami Nice, featuring Katie Walsh and I, and all modern man movies, including Collateral, Ferrari, Black Hat, you name it, it is there. And the Jimmy Carn Eulogy, One Thief Minute. Plenty of shows over there. If you want to support everything that we do, we'd greatly appreciate it if you checked out our Patreon / One Heat Minute. Over there, you can see weekly new releases. One Hot Take is the show there. You can also see The Decade Project, where we look back 10 years on the films that are still hanging around, currently working through 2014. They'll be on the main feed at the end of the year, but if you are a patron, for as little as a dollar a month, you're getting them all throughout the year. And most importantly, as this is a Minhunter episode, Minhunter video podcast will be popping up. Not every single episode, but most episodes will pop up as a video podcast as a drop there, so you can watch and consume and see all of the frames and images that we're talking about in all of these episodes. Every little bit of your support helps. So sharing, talking to us online at OHM Pods, or for myself at One Blake Minute on Instagram and Twitter. Thanks so much for listening.
Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts for the power, performance, and reliability of a new SuperStart battery. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.